Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. Well, today I'm joined by Matt Wolfe, theatre critic for the International New York Times. The play is the thing. And that, of course, is a quote from Shakespeare's Hamlet. We'll be looking at the very latest production of the show on in London at present. Also, a revival of a work from the pen of star playwright Abby Morgan. It's called Splendour. It's on at the Donmar Warehouse. And we'll get Matt's take on another of the Bard's greatest hits, the epic Richard II, directed by Simon Godwin. No relation. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. There is nothing either good or bad that thinking makes it so. So what do we think, Matt? Is it Hamlet, good, bad, or just Sherlock? The production at the Barbican has been much hyped because of the man in the title role. He was catapulted to international fame through his role in the TV version of Sherlock and various film parts, including The Imitation Game. Benedict Cumberbatch, he's the latest celebrity actor to take on the Prince of Denmark, from John Gielgud through Kenneth Branagh, Simon Russell Beale, David Tennant. So did he, to use that awful phrase, make it his own?
He did make it his own. It was sort of extraordinary actually seeing it at a press preview the other night, because I think we've all, at least in London, read so much about it. There's been so much anticipation. There has, as you say, been a lot of hype. The hype not of his own making. I mean, he hasn't gone out and hyped it. In fact, he's given, as far as I can tell, no interviews. But there's just been such a sort of feeding frenzy around it. It's like Beatlemania, but displaced to the realm of the Bard. People, were tweeting, of course, from the very first moment of the first preview that, you can forgive. What was perhaps less forgivable was that some newspapers reviewed the first preview, which really isn't done in theater parlance. So here it now finally is. And the interesting thing about it is that he acquits himself beautifully. It's a very physical Hamlet. It's a very impulsive Hamlet. It's a very mentally and physically agile Hamlet. But I would say that the set's the thing with this production. It has been designed by Ez Devlin, who's sort of a star set designer. She's the Benedict Cumberbatch of the scenic design world, in fact. Her credits include not just lots of plays, but she does a lot of gigs, installations, and she also did the 2012 Olympics. So if your credits include that, you clearly can think big. Mm. So this is Elsinore, you know, the castle setting of the play, as it's never been seen before, at least by me. It's gargantuan. It fills every single nook and cranny of the Barbican's already capacious stage, the result of which is that it's extremely impressive to look at. It's very arresting. It looks like a kind of art installation. But the actors, when it comes time for them to populate it, look actually quite small. And for quite a while in the first act, I thought, when are they going to take over the play? And when is it going to be about the people in the play, not the visuals of the play? Mm. There's something that happens to the set, which perhaps I shouldn't reveal for people who are going to see it after the interval.
Nobody can get a ticket. Matt.
Yes, but there's some people who I hope already have tickets. Yeah. There were two empty seats, two rows behind me, Georgina, and my heart went out because I know so many people in the States would have leapt on the next flight. Anyway, something happens to the set after the interval, which I won't give away, but the result of that is that all of a sudden the actors look a bit bigger. And I thought, oh, now the production is coming into its own. I think the intention is to subsume all the people, Hamlet and the royal household, within this world, which is bigger than they are. So I think this must be, to some degree, deliberate. But it does make it very hard for the actors to kind of assert their primacy within the play as a whole. And as a result, a lot of the supporting cast look kind of lost, as if they're not quite sure how to actually guide this ship of state, this rotten ship of state. Benedict Cumberbatch, because, you know, as if we hardly need remind people, but it is true, he began in the theater. He's not some television icon who's deigning to do a play for the first time. Mm. He's a theater animal. And he knows how to hold a stage. And because he's very animated physically, there's a lot of derring do to his performance, which does draw you towards him. The lighting helps as well. A lot of his soliloquies are spotlit. And he acquits himself very well. I think the production as a whole, though, is surprisingly conventional. It doesn't particularly offer any insights into the play that those of us who have seen the play before might not have already had. You think with this extraordinary set that there's going to be some sort of maybe 90-degree angle on the play. Mm-hmm. There was talk early on that various soliloquies were being moved around, preeminently to be or not to be, which had been put at the very beginning. That was not the case by the time I saw it. It had been put back to its normal, quote-unquote, place, as much as there is a normal place, because there's a lot of, you know, dispute about where various speeches belong. But this is not the first production to tinker with the text, or to have tinkered with the text. But for all that, it's a surprisingly four-square production that doesn't really reinvent anything about the play except the visuals.
That's so interesting. I mean, I was wondering about the director, Lindsay Turner.
Yeah.
She's won an Olivia. She's highly regarded.
Yeah.
I wondered if there was any kind of feminist spin on it.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating you say that, because I was thinking about the Hamlets I'd seen over the years, and I've seen a lot of them. And I may be wrong, but my hunch tells me this is the first Hamlet I've ever seen directed by a woman. I've seen Hamlet played by women, but I've never actually seen one directed by a woman. And I kind of thought Lindsay Turner's an incredibly fine director, and she's done a lot of wonderful stuff at the Royal Court. She directed Chimerica at the Almeida and on the West End. I don't think she's done much Shakespeare, as far as I'm aware. But to answer your question, not really. Anastasia Hiller, very good Gertrude, very good casting for Gertrude, but doesn't really take it anywhere that we haven't seen. I think the best of the supporting players is perhaps Sean Brooke's Ophelia, and maybe that's partly due to Lindsay Turner. I've always thought Ophelia was, of all the roles in Hamlet, the least playable, because really she comes on as a victim and then she ends, well, not giving too much away.
People know she's dead.
Yeah, she ends as a suicide, Georgina. And we really don't see this great love between her and Hamlet, which she then laments. It's not shown. I always feel like it's the scene that Shakespeare left out. And Sean Brooke manages that elision very, very well. But Ciarán Hinds, good actor, but doesn't really register particularly as Claudius. The Horatio and the Laertes are kind of neither here nor there.
Must be very, very difficult with that great presence to contend with. Now, we've talked about tickets. There are, of course, tickets available on the day.
That's
and
right.
Hamlet's on at the Barbican until the end of October.
Yes.
Let's move on now, Matt. We were discussing feminism, and Abby Morgan's not been shy declaring herself a feminist. This is the first time, though, that the Donmar Warehouse, under the leadership of Josie Rourke, has put on a show by a female playwright. The show itself stars four women. Mm-hmm. It's an early work by Morgan. She's given us such excellent pieces as The Iron Lady and Suffragettes previously. So tell us a little bit about the plot. It's about a dictator, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a revival, as you rightly say, of a play that was first seen in Scotland in 2000. I'd never seen it, though, prior to this production, so it was new to me. And it's got an all-female cast headed by the sublime Sinead Cusack, who actually would be a great Gertrude in Hamlet. So somebody find her a Hamlet to do at some point. It's kind of a puzzle play. It begins in the middle of things, and you have to kind of piece together the relationship between the four women and their collective relationship to another tottering ship of state. Actually, it dovetails well with Hamlet. She is the wife of an unnamed and unseen leader, a dictator. Is this a Balkan location? Is it somewhere in the Middle East, the Far East? We're not told. But she is kind of tottering around on rather extraordinary stiletto heels, drinking chili vodka, C-H-I-L-I. And outside, we are absolutely led to believe that the world is coming to an end, or at least her world is coming to an end. So she is drinking while the unnamed state burns. And she's accompanied by various people, one of whom is her putative best friend who isn't really, and a photojournalist who has come to do a story on her, and another woman who is from the lesser social classes. And that sets up a kind of class thing. It's an interesting play, but I have to say, I think it's made particularly good by the production. I think Robert Hasty, male director, interestingly, for a woman writer, an all-female play, has done a beautiful job. The last thing he did at the Donmar was an all-male play, My Night with Reg, so he's giving both genders equal time. And it's one of these, the play feels like a response to an unwritten assignment, as if Abby Morgan had been told, okay, think yourself into the head of a character and write that situation. So the response is, wife of unnamed dictator refuses to leave her palatial surrounds. What happens now? And you get 85 minutes of that. It's structured. Part of the puzzle is that it's told in a fractured narrative. So bits are repeated, reprised. All of that is a little bit self-conscious, but the actors are terrific and Sinead Cusack is worth the price of admission alone.
That is Splendor, and it's on until the 26th of September at the Dunmar Warehouse. This is the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Georgina Godwin, and Matt Wolfe of the International New York Times is here. We're talking theatre and returning now to Shakespeare. To use a musical analogy, if Cumberbatch's Hamlet is top of the pops, then the production of Richard II at the Globe is high opera, and it's aimed at an entirely different section of the market. This is Shakespeare for real Shakespeare lovers. And if you're going to stand in the pit for the duration of the show, you really do have to be a dedicated lover of Shakespeare. I was sitting and I had a cushion, and although I was swept along by the excellent production, I wasn't entirely unaware that it was close to 3 hours long.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing about Shakespeare's plays is they are long. Interestingly, The Hamlet is 3 hours and 10 minutes. Now, that for Hamlet is short. When Peter Hall directed Hamlet 20 years ago, whenever it was, with Stephen Delane, and he said he was going to do every single line, that was 4+ hours. I happen to love Richard II as a play for one very simple reason, which is that the language is possibly the most luxurious and luxuriant that Shakespeare ever wrote. I mean, there is speech after speech where you just feel like you're taking a bath in some of the most beautiful rhetoric. And it's not really a play that has a lot of action. It's not Richard III. People often confuse the two. They could not be more different. Mm. There's a reason why Richard III is more popular. Richard II is a more cerebral play. It's a slightly more diffident play, but it can be very, very moving, because what it's about is the story of a divinely anointed king who, in the course of his downward trajectory, has to learn to be a man. So he is appointed into this extraordinary exalted position of the monarchy, and then he has to realize, what is it like to be human? Mm. And it's a great story. I like the production. I thought it was gorgeous to look at. Paul Wills has sort of dressed the Globe stage with a kind of gilded splendor, which I'd not seen there before. And Charles Edwards is a wonderful actor and is returning to the stage in November to the National to do a play called Waste. But it didn't quite grab me the way, for instance, Eddie Redmayne did when he played the part in 2011 at the Donmar. Some of it is played for laughs. Some of it is a bit, shall we say, leisurely. And I think with a play like this, it has to just be, the thought has to be a bit more active. It has to be a bit more on the front foot. I felt like they were slightly sitting back on it a bit.
Mm-hmm. It's directed by Simon Godwin. Now, the review, I think, in The Guardian was very critical of him, saying he pushed it to the border of triviality. Would you agree with that?
Not really. I mean, the performance I saw, to be honest, and I didn't go to the press notes, I just went, well after. I thought it was going to be played for laughs much more than it was. Charles Edwards does have a kind of easeful saunter that he brings to the part. The bisexuality, to put it mildly, if that even is certainly pushed in this production. There have been other productions that have seen Richard II quite bluntly as gay. And there, there's one bit where after the death of one of the primary characters at the beginning of the play, which is beautifully rendered by, again, this gorgeous rhetoric, Richard II clocks it and then he goes, well, that's that. So much for him. And so we're meant to laugh at kind of the breezy callousness of the character. But I think there's something trivial about this boy man or man boy that Richard II is, who really doesn't understand what it means to live and die until he himself begins his own downward spiral. And then once he ends up in jail and has a real crise de foi, he is awakened to something quite extraordinary. But it didn't quite pin me to the back wall the way the best Richard II's have.
Now, we were talking about the design, but I wonder how much watching the play is influenced by the fact that it's in Shakespeare's Globe, the theatre that's been designed for Shakespeare particularly.
Yeah, what's interesting about Shakespeare's Globe, which is a theatre I've absolutely come to love, is that when it first opened, 20-odd years ago, whatever, everyone thought it was just going to be kind of dumbed-down Shakespeare, basically for stupid Americans. And it's been much, much grander and greater than that. And again, scenically, everyone thought, well, it's defined by these two pillars either side of the stage. There isn't a lot you can do with that. But actually, you can. And I suppose maybe one shouldn't say too much. But if you've been to the Globe before and you walk in to see this, you have never seen the Globe look the way it does in this production.
Matt, we've got to go now. But just before we do, two very different Shakespeare plays. If you could choose to see just one or the other, Hamlet or Richard II?
I'd pick Benedict's performance and Richard II's text.
Thank you very much indeed. Richard II's on until October the 18th at the Globe in London. And that's the end of today's show. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. My producer was Holly Fisher. Do join us again tomorrow for our book review with Parul Sigal. But for now, thanks very much for listening and have a great weekend.